All right, guys. So we're about halfway through a sermon series on deconstruction. And this morning we're going to kind of pause a little bit in like the deep dive into what's going on with deconstruction in our world. And what I'd really like for us to do today is a little bit of self-inventory, okay? But before we get there, here's where we've been for the past few weeks. Just catch you up just a little bit, all right? For one, we found that deconstruction is nothing new. In fact, deconstruction is very old. As long as there have been people around to establish cultural norms, beliefs, and ideologies, then there have been new generations to dismantle and challenge those cultural norms, beliefs, and ideologies. So that's been going around for a long time, all right? So at this particular cultural moment, one of the things that we've made note of is that deconstruction is on a bit of an upswing, and there have been other upswings of deconstruction in the past, but we certainly are there right now in our moment in history. So for sophisticated 21st century progressive people, we're in love with the idea of dismantling history, right? Undoing the cultural norms, challenging the ideals that have been handed down to us. But don't misunderstand me as you hear me saying that. Not all of that is a bad thing. A lot of things need to be deconstructed. And a couple weeks ago, we talked about how race and racism have caused enormous amounts of deconstruction in the church, and that that's probably a good thing in a lot of ways. But the question is, what are we deconstructing? And are we really looking at what's going on in history? One of the things that we looked at was that Jesus himself was doing a tremendous amount of deconstruction. 2 weeks ago, we saw how Jesus radically deconstructed the way that the people around him looked at race and ethnicity. And when they heard him, they got hot about it, all right? And the long-lasting impact of that is that today and throughout the history of the church, the true church, the church being who the church is supposed to be, that when we are who we're supposed to be and follow in the footsteps of Jesus, things like racism should be dismantled, not built up, right? And look at what the black church did, acting like the church is supposed to act in dismantling a lot of the broken systems in this world, and that movement continues today. The civil rights movement began as a church movement. Think about that. It was British evangelicals that helped end the transatlantic slave trade. So there are indeed broken things in our faith that and in our world that need to be deconstructed. The question, though, that we've been leaning into for the past few weeks is, if we're going to deconstruct things in our world, and certainly our faith, how do we deconstruct faith without losing our faith? And so this morning, I'm hoping is that we might be able to do just a little bit of self-reflection. This is kind of like a hit the pause button moment in the middle of a sermon series that's a bit heavy because it's dealing with some heavy subjects. And we're going to just kind of hit that pause button. And we're going to open up the word that Nicolette read to us this morning and simply ask the Spirit of God to help reveal to us the posture of our hearts this morning. Where are our hearts? And it begins with this question. It's one that we've asked ourselves a lot around here in this church. And it's, who is Jesus? Who is Jesus? Can we agree that's a very important question to ask? It's a good question. And how we answer that question determines a lot about how we live our lives. And we get another clue here in Matthew chapter 27, verse 11. So here's the scene. Jesus has been arrested in the wee hours of the morning, just like the night before. And he's now standing before the governor of the province of Judea, the Roman governor. His name is Pilate. And Pilate asks Jesus a very good question. He says, are you the king of the Jews? Because this is what he's being accused of claiming to be the king. All right. And so he says, are you the king of the Jews? To which Jesus responds, you have said so. All right. It's kind of a simple but loaded answer. All right. Because Jesus knows a couple of things. One, Jesus knows that not only is he, yes, he's the king of the Jews, but he's the king of the universe, okay? And he also knows, too, that whatever the governor has in his mind, whatever Pilate has in his head about what the king is or what a king is, falls woefully short of what Jesus actually is. So it's a good question with a complicated kind of non-answer from Jesus. But we have the whole of the Gospels to know that Jesus is indeed the king. And Jesus believes himself to be the king. And Jesus is announcing himself to be the king. In fact, the Greek word Christ, it's not just his last name, Jesus Christ. The Greek word Christ and the Hebrew word Messiah both mean the same thing. It means anointed king. Right? That is who Jesus is proclaiming himself to be across the countryside as he moves from place to place. The anointed king, not just of the Jews, but of the kingdom of God. So Pilate does not know what to do with this, all right? He does not know what to do with Jesus. So what does he do? He punts, right? He said, he's nervous about it, so he said, I'm going to let the people decide. He doesn't want to make a decision about Jesus. So why not let the people make a decision about Jesus? Look at what it says in verse 15. Now it was the governor's custom, it says, at the festival to release a prisoner chosen by the crowd. So Pilate doesn't want to make the choice. He wants the crowd to make the choice. It's like the ultimate cop-out, right? But at this point, I'm not interested in Pilate anymore. Now I'm interested in the crowd, right? What is the crowd going to do? What choice are they going to make? And what choice do they have? It says in verse 16, at that time, they had a well-known prisoner whose name was Jesus Barabbas. Now, did you catch that? There's another Jesus. Like, what in the world? There's two Jesuses. And Pilate asks the crowd, which Jesus do you want? Jesus Barabbas or Jesus who's called the Messiah? This is a remarkable moment. Not only because of the gravity of faith and history that hangs in this moment, but because this very moment is a microcosm of our lives. Our lives, yours and mine, are continually a choice between two Jesuses. The choice between King Jesus and the Jesus of our own making. What do I mean by that? We know very little about Barabbas, Jesus Barabbas, except that he was a criminal of some notoriety, okay? Most scholars agree that he was probably a well-known bandit and that his notoriety came and he was well-known because of his exploits, probably targeting the Romans, all right? And this was common in the first century. Desperate criminals would target the enemy of the Jews. And some may have even seen Barabbas as a revolutionary and may have given him props for that and had respect for him because of that. But Barabbas was no threat to the crowd. He was a criminal, but he was no threat to the crowd. He asked nothing of the crowd. Jesus, on the other hand, had made an overt declaration of kingship. Only just days before this day, when he's on trial, just days before, he rode into Jerusalem on a donkey to the shouts of Hosanna, save us. So they're recognizing him as the saving king. It was a messianic moment. And then what does Jesus do? He goes straight into the temple and he turns the place upside down, right? And then he spends the rest of the week giving hard teachings about what it means to follow him. Even his closest disciples fled at the moment when things got the toughest. Peter, just hours before this moment, had denied Jesus three times. So here come the chief priests and the elders through the crowd. They're making their way through the crowd, influencing the crowd, persuading the crowd, it says, verse 20, to ask for Barabbas and to have Jesus executed. So Jesus Barabbas was no threat to the teachers of the law. They were happy to let this criminal go. Jesus Barabbas was a Jesus that they could control. Jesus the Messiah, on the other hand, well, for 3 years he had proven over and over again that they could not control him. And so the moment of truth finally comes. The governor asked the crowd, which Jesus do you want me to release to you? Barabbas, they said. Barabbas, what shall I do then with Jesus who is called the Messiah? Pilate asks. And they all answered, crucify him. Now, can we just pause there for a moment? And Mike, wherever you are, you can come on up. We're moving things along this morning, folks. Think about this moment. As we hit this midpoint in our series on deconstruction, I think that we need to be able to do a little bit of self-examination, particularly in regards to our relationship to the person of Jesus. See, I believe that we are all dealing with two Jesuses in our lives, the Jesus that we can control and the Jesus that we can't control. And the reality is that most of us want the Jesus that we can control, right? We like that Jesus. We're happy to release that Jesus into our lives to be whatever. But whatever we want that Jesus to be. If we want that Jesus to be a flag-waving Republican, great, he's a Republican. If we want that Jesus to be a woke Democrat, great, he's as woke as we want him to be. If we want that Jesus, the Jesus who's okay with the private things that we do on our computers, great, we can have that Jesus. We can control that Jesus. If we want a Jesus who will promise us riches and prosperity, okay, we can have the Jesus who promises us riches and prosperity. If we want a Jesus who is off there doing his own thing, And lets us just do whatever we want. He's not going to bother us. You know, he's going to do his own thing. We're going to do our own thing. I won't bother you. You don't bother me. Then we can have that distant, disengaged, kind of deist idea of Jesus. We can make and we can do, we do make Jesus into a lot of things. Do we not? As long as we're the ones pulling the strings. And what do we do with the other Jesus? The actual King Jesus. Well, what did the crowd do? Crucify him, they screamed, it says in verse 23. Oh, Pastor, what does any of this have to do with deconstruction? Well, the hard truth that all of us need to wrestle with is what have I deconstructed Jesus into? How have I remade the image of who Jesus is? How have I, like the crowd before Pilate, listened to the convincing words of other people to embrace another Jesus? So I'm not going to answer that for you, by the way. And we're going to end a little bit early here this morning because of all that's going on. But before we do, I want for us to just sit with this question. There are two Jesuses. Which one are you going to choose? The one that you can control, or the one who longs for you to turn over that control to him? There are all kinds of reasons, and we'll talk about more of them in the weeks to come, but there's all kinds of reasons we deconstruct our faith in Jesus or avoid faith in Jesus altogether. But more often than not, at the heart of it is just a desire to be the Lord of our own lives. We all do this. I know a lot of you are thinking, you're like, Pastor, if I were there, you know, I wouldn't have been crying, crucified in that crowd. It wouldn't have been me. It's like we all do that, right? Like, if I lived back in the time of slavery, I would have been an abolitionist. Like, you sure about that? What does it mean for us to choose King Jesus as we have standing before us a benevolent, loving King who wants to shower us with his love and rule, yes, rule over our lives with grace and power and care and reconciliation and more than we could ever imagine as possible. And so can we just take a few moments before we close with a song? Can we just take a few moments to do some of that self-evaluation? Which Jesus are you releasing into your heart? Let's take these few moments. Close your eyes if you need to. You don't have to.